Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Summer wind came blowing in from across.
That is the chairman of the board, also known as Francis Albert Sinatra, one of my dad's favorite singers. And if you're listening to this segment, obviously you're a baseball fan. And And the reason that I'm doing this is the story about the 1986 World Series, I think, is incomplete. As somebody who was there, as somebody who talked to my dad after every game, and also talked to other people involved in those events. And I think the narrative is incomplete. And so I've read a few stories that have been written upon his passing that continue to perpetuate something that's not true. And so I felt kind of the obligation to my father's memory to make sure that the truth, as I know it, as I heard it the night of Game 6, sees the light of day. And so that's what this is about. And if you're tuning into this, you're probably a baseball fan. This is Vin Scully's call of Mookie Wilson's at-bat in the 10th inning of Game 6 as he came up to bat in Shea Stadium and faced Bob Stanley.
Calvin Giraldi couldn't do it, and it's up to Bob Stanley, and it's up to Mookie Wilson, and the crowd is alive again, and Rick Aguilera praying that he'll get off the hook. Mookie Wilson struck out, singled to right, grounded out, and then sacrificed, and that was the bunt that Gettman fielded and threw high to Spike on at second base.
Dale Ford just checked that ball, rubbing it. Now he's going out to talk to Stanley. I wonder what that's all about.
Stanley throws, among other things, a palm ball. You have the tying run 90 feet away in Kevin Mitchell and the possible winning run at first in Ray Knight. And here's Mookie. 55,078 here at Shea, and they have really been put through the ringer. One ball, one strike. Ball two. And on deck, Howard Johnson, who had that most important at-bat in the ninth inning. Away, 2-2.
Now, just to set everything up for everybody, right? Right now, you have Kevin Mitchell at third base. You have Ray Knight at first base. You have Bob Stanley on the mound, Mookie Wilson at the plate. And there's two outs. The score is 5-3, the Red Sox.
Fouled away again.
Mm-hmm.
Pinch and mount some more. With two out in the 10th, 5-4 Red Sox. Ray Knight at first, Kevin Mitchell at third. 2-2 to Mookie Wilson. And it's going to go to the backstop. Here comes Mitchell to score the tying run. And Ray Knight is at second base. And he pops it in the air, foul, off to the right. Gidman coming over. He will not have a play. That was a wild pitch.
Way inside, Gidman reaches for it. You see he hardly moved as far as shifting, and it gets by him, a wild pitch. Apparently not near where he was looking for the pitch.
5-5 in a delirious 10th inning. Line drive foul.
And Marty Barrett was out of position because they had Knight really picked off, but Stanley didn't see him. There it is again. You see, he just reaches for the ball. Down goes Mookie. It kind of sailed inside. And here comes Barrett in to talk to Stanley, because had Mookie hit just a weak ground ball, Barrett was way out of position because they had a good chance to get Knight at second base.
Can you believe this ball game at Shea?
Oh, brother. Woo.
So the winning run is at second base.
Oh, brother is right. He doesn't even know. He has no idea how right he is.
Out, 3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first. Behind the bag. It gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight, and the Mets win it. If one picture is worth 1,000 words, you have seen about 1,000,000 words. But more than that, you have seen an absolutely bizarre finish to Game 6 of the 1986 World Series. The Mets are not only alive, they are well, and they will play the Red Sox in Game 7 tomorrow.
That is painful to listen to. Agony in Shea Stadium that night. I sat there with other members of my family, my ex-wife with me, and listening to it. And the link is in this post. So if you want to go down and watch that, you can just go down and you'll see the link to the Vin Scully call, and so feel free to watch that. But the pass ball that allows a tying run in, that allows a winning run to get the second, and then a pitch, and then a play that lives in baseball history. Game 6 of the 1986 World Series. So, so I just want to share with people, you know, what I know about that night, because I think it's important. The first thing I'll tell you is how I grew up. From the time my mom would let me, and I don't know how old I was probably 7 or 8, because I know it was in the Southern League. I used to go to the stadium with my dad. And, so we would leave at 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon. We'd have lunch, and then go to the stadium. And you can imagine, for a little kid. And when I was 7 or 8, it was in the Southern League. In 1966, my dad managed the Mobile A's of the Southern League, and that which many of the players that would play on the Oakland A's World Championships teams played on that team and his team in 1967 up in Birmingham. Reggie Jackson, Sal Bando, Dave Duncan, Marcel and Rene Latchman played on those teams. Joe Rudy played on those teams. Raleigh Fingers played. And so all the names that would later become household names for the Oakland Athletics, my dad came through that system with them. So as a little kid, we would stay in school in our home of Sacramento, California, until we got out of school in normally the middle of June. My mom would pack us up and put us in the car, and we would drive to wherever my dad was managing. And we did that every year growing up. And then we'd get there. We'd spend the summer there with him. He'd be there for about half the time between road trips. And then at the end of August, we would pack our stuff up, and we would go back home to Sacramento and start school. And he would normally, when he was a minor league guy, he was normally home by the middle of October. And then as he got to be more successful, he'd go to the instructional league, and ultimately that whole thing took him to the big leagues. But for me, the routine of my life started when I was 7 years old and continued to that night in 1986, which was, if I could, go to the stadium with my dad. And, I remember going out to Shea Stadium on the subway with him, and we were riding out there, and he looked at me and he said, "You know who I wish was here?" And I said, "Who?" And he said, "John Vivian Forden." Now, John Vivian Forden was my grandfather, my mother's father, right? And he was an accounting professor. You know, he went to work at a very young age to help provide for his family, was an accounting professor. And when my mom and dad were dating, my mom took him to meet her parents, and my grandfather asked my dad, "What do you do for a living?" And he said, "I play baseball." And my grandfather said, "No, I mean, seriously, what do you do for a living?" And my dad said, "I am a baseball player." And my grandfather said, "That surely can't be, you know, what you intend to do professionally." And my dad said, "Well, it is." And so my grandfather hiked him up into the hills of Central Washington and tried to kill him, I think. So, but anyway, we were riding out to Shea Stadium. He said, "I wish that guy could see this right now." And so, it was like, talking, about the ball game and, just about life. I mean, and so that was my life growing up. And that night in October of 1986 was no different. Before I talk about the events of that night, I want to talk about him going to Boston. First of all, managing the Boston Red Sox for an Irish Catholic guy is a dream job. First of all, Fenway Park, right? If you're a baseball fan, right? If that place had voices, the stories it would tell, right? From the way the concrete is worn by the generations of people from New England and all over the country going to that venue, right? To the Green Monster, to just the way the stadium is. And at the time, the locker rooms were really small. They hadn't changed, right, since the stadium was built. And so, I can't tell you how excited he was to go there when Haywood Sullivan hired him. And in 1985, I was a lieutenant in the Marine Corps, and we left in February to deploy to Okinawa in what the Marine Corps calls the Unit Deployment Program. And I was a part of an infantry battalion, the 1st Battalion, 5th Marine Regiment, the storied 5th Marine Regiment. That fought in World War I, extensively World War II, Korea and Vietnam, Iraq and Afghanistan to this day. And I was a member of it in Iraq in 2006. But this was 1985, so I left in February, and I didn't get a chance to really to see the Red Sox much in 1985. I remember getting up in the middle of the night in Okinawa. And calling Fenway on opening day And I remember talking to Helen and introducing myself. I said, Helen, my name is Mike McNamara. I'm overseas. And I was wondering if you could, you know, put me through to my dad's office. And she said, oh, Mike, I've heard about you. And hold on. And she transfers a call down to the office. And I think Kari Ostrymski picked up the phone. And I knew it wasn't my dad's voice. And, you know, the person says, hello. I said, is John McNamara there? And he says, yeah, who's this? I said, this is his son, Mike. And he said, Mike, this is Kari Ostrymski. I said, hi, Mr. Ostrymski, how are you? He said, I'm good. He said, but you want to talk to your dad? And I said, I do. And then I think Ted Williams grabbed the phone, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall this right. And he says, Lieutenant, what are you doing? I said, just waiting to talk to my dad. And he said, this is Ted Williams. Now, Ted Williams is a legend in the Marine Corps, right? He's a baseball legend, certainly, but he's an icon of the Marine Corps. He trained pilots in World War II, then was a fighter pilot in Korea. And so, all of a sudden he's on the phone, somebody who I'd read about as a kid and knew of his service as a Marine. And so, you know, I don't know, a quick conversation with Ted Williams. He asked me where I was. I told him I was on the island of Okinawa, and he said, all right. He said, don't screw it up over there. I said, I won't, sir. And so I got a chance to talk to my dad. Now, I mean, being overseas, I didn't talk to him that much, but the couple times I talked to him, the thing he told me was, hey, when you get back, we've got a guy that wait till you see him pitch. I said, really? And he said, yeah. I said, you know, what's his name? And he said, his name is Roger Clemens. And I said, is he good? And he said, I only heard my dad in my lifetime say this about two people. He said, he's got lightning in his arm and he's a competitor. And he said, and if he can stay healthy, he's going to be something special in this game and he'll go to the Hall of Fame. And, I mean, my dad just didn't say that. The only other person he said that ever I heard him, you know, that he said to me about was he came home, and I can't remember what year it was, but he was going to spring training in Arizona. So he might have been with the Angels. And he came home from spring training, so he's in Arizona. We're up in Sacramento. So he was home. He got home late at night, and he came in my bedroom and just to say hi. And I woke up, and so we were talking about spring training and, you know, would they be any good this year? And I said, anything exciting happen in spring training? And he said, well, I'll tell you what, I saw a kid play who's got a chance to go to the Hall of Fame. I said, really? And he said, yeah. He said, he's like 18, 19 years old. He's a shortstop, and he plays for the Seattle Mariners. His name is Alex Rodriguez, and you're going to hear about him because he is an unbelievable player. I said, even as a young guy? And he says, yeah, even that young. He said, he walks out to the plate, he goes out to the field, and he said, Mike, you ought to see him play. So I say that because, you know, my dad was a huge fan of Roger Clemens. In fact, Roger had to have some minor shoulder surgery and the Red Sox were, you know, when should we have this done? You know, he can pitch to the end of the year. If he pitches to the end of the year, we'll probably finish higher, which means the franchise gets more money. And I in my conversations with my dad, he lobbied Haywood Sullivan. No, you know, look, we can't win this thing. So let's shut him down, get him, you know, his surgery done so he's ready for spring training. So again, my dad was a huge Roger Clemens fan. And in 1986, Roger Clemens, you know, was what he was, which was a great pitcher. So I think that's an important part of the story. That night, the disaster that you just heard Vin Scully call, right, that unfolds. And I stayed with my wife, and I think one or two of my sisters were at the game too. And if you ever have anything, if you ever have like a negative biblical sporting event happen to you, you really want it to have to happen in like Kansas City or Minnesota, right, where there's really nice Midwestern people around. The place you don't want to have, one of the places you don't want to have happen is New York City. I mean, it was unbelievable. And almost at some points, it was a little concerning because you had, you know, people figure out where the families of the other team live, and people get drunk and they come by and they're just screaming. And you know, and I'm a lieutenant in the Marine Corps, and I told, you know, I told more than one person that night, hey, you need to get out of here. And so anyway, we wind up getting on the subway and going back to the Marquis Marriott downtown in Manhattan. And I got, you know, back up to my dad's suite, and he was there already. And I remember being, you know, he wasn't drinking his scotch, which was a cause for alarm. and so there was a number of people around. There was friends of family members, which was not normally the way, you know, we would do it, but it was the World Series, and so they had come, and so they were there. And so when that kind of thinned out, you know, he and I sat down, and I said, why did you take Roger Clemens out? And he looked at me and he said, I didn't take him out. And I said, what happened? And he said, well, he told me that, he said he's got a little bit of a cold, and he was running out of gas, and he started to develop a blister or a paper cut on his finger. And, you know, it's important that my dad had a relationship with his pitchers in that he expected his pitchers to tell him stuff like that. My dad was a catcher. And so, I mean, his pitchers knew that. You have to tell me the truth. And so when we were talking, right, he didn't, you know, Roger Clemens had just been honest with him. So the details of the story were, you know, that he told me were, you know, the side gets retired in the bottom of the seventh. The Red Sox come in to hit for the top of the eighth. Roger Clemens goes down the tunnel where he's sitting in a chair. The pitching coach, who'd been my dad's pitching coach since 1979 in Cincinnati and then in Boston, he goes down, you know, to talk to Roger and check on him. And Fish comes back to the dugout and says, you need to come down here and talk to Roger. And so my dad says, all right, what's, you know, and so he goes down. He says, what's going on? And that's when Roger Clemens tells him, you know, I'm running out of gas, and I've got the start of a paper cut or a blister. And my dad said, are you sure? And he said, yeah, you need to bring in Calvin. And that was the end of the discussion. And so when you look at, you know, the line score that night, okay, Roger Clemens, 7 innings pitched, 4 hits. He gave up 2 runs. 1 was earned. He walked 2, and he struck out 8 in 7 innings. Now, I'm going to tell you this. There's no way my dad would take Roger Clemens out of that game of his own volition, and he didn't do it that night. And so the rest becomes baseball history. Okay? And my dad didn't have too much to say about that for a long, long time. But I believe it was the following spring, Peter Gammons writes an article in Sports Illustrated and says, my dad lost the World Series for the Red Sox by pulling Roger Clemens out of the game. Well, that's in fact not true. And my dad and Peter Gammons had been friends. But I will tell you, one thing my dad wasn't really good at was handling the media. If he felt you wronged him, right, he didn't take that well. He came from an era when sports writers, you know, went out and drank with managers and coaches. They wrote about the game. And that wasn't really how all of this happened. And so so that becomes the narrative of Game 6 of the World Series, in that John McNamara pinched hit for Roger Clemens and lost the game for the Red Sox. And so I think it's important to tell the truth as I know it, as I heard it that night from my dad. And I will tell you what, I mean, my dad wasn't a perfect man. Okay, but I can tell you one thing my dad wasn't. My dad wasn't a liar. That's not something you'll hear John McNamara accused of being. And so, I mean, for years and years, my dad never really talked about it because my dad is a baseball player. And the one thing baseball players don't do is they don't throw other baseball players under the bus. But this narrative persists and persists and persists that he lost the World Series. And I will tell you what, I mean, my dad essentially got run out of Boston. I mean, it was one of the, it was an ugly, ugly thing when ultimately, you know, he was fired. And, but I won't really go into that because that's not my purpose here. But so I think it's important that people understand the truth. And the truth is that Roger Clemens told my dad the truth about, you know, whether he could finish the game or not. So really, I've never seen anybody ask Roger Clemens, hey, what happened and what was the conversation between you and your manager that night in the tunnel in Shea Stadium? Because your manager left that, your manager, a huge fan of yours, a huge fan of yours, because the Red Sox clearly aren't in that position without Roger Clemens. He's got his ace pitching, right? And at the time he comes out of the game, it's a 3-2 ball game. It's a one-run game. They've got six outs to get. And he's got the best pitcher in the world on the mound. So, I mean, that's the truth. My dad has said that from that night. Okay? And he's been consistent throughout. But they're very powerful guys like Peter Gammons chose to believe Roger Clemens. And so my dad's dead now. And I just want to add my voice because I was with him that night. He and I sat and talked about that ball game like we had talked about thousands of baseball games from the time that I was 7 years old. Why did you do this? Why did you take this guy out? Why did you, why were you in your office with the door closed for so long after the game? And that's the way I grew up. Ultimately, that's why I wanted to be a leader in the Marine Corps, because I wanted to do what my dad did, but I wanted to do it on my own terms. But I knew how to do that because I'd grown up watching it. And so that night's conversation about the game was no different than anyone we ever had. And again, it wasn't the epic baseball meltdown because they still had Game 7 in front of them. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to tell the truth as I know it. Now, I will tell you what, subsequent to that, when all the controversy started the following year, you know, I had conversations with Bill Fisher about it. And Bill Fisher told me the exact same story as my dad said. And I asked Bill Fisher, I said, well, do you think Roger will ever tell the truth? And he said, well, I talked to him. Because your dad's taken so much heat for this. And I asked him, why don't you just tell the truth? He said, and Mike, you got to understand, Roger Clemens is a competitor. He was, he's named the Cy Young Award winner and the American League Most Valuable Player, which, you know, has happened only a few times in baseball history. And he said, and if I can recall the conversation, he said to Fish, Fish, I didn't take myself out of that game. He took me out of that game. And you know what? Roger Clemens is right. Roger Clemens is right. My dad did take him out of that game. But he took him out of that game because of what Roger Clemens told my dad. And so I don't know if Roger Clemens, he was 25 years old. I don't know if he believes, I certainly know that later on in his career, I mean, he was a different, tougher pitcher, right? Because of that experience. And, you know, if he had a chance to do it again, you know, he probably would not have taken himself out of that ballgame. But he was 25 years old at the time. And he was being honest with his manager. And it wasn't a biblical event that night. It was just a really brutal loss. And so that's the truth as I know it. Told to me by my dad, told to me by his pitching coach who I'd known at that time for, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. Bill Fisher, a fellow Marine. That's right. So I think it's important to understand that. Now, the other thing that comes up is that I had a conversation with my dad about relative to the World Series is the whole issue of why was Bill Buckner in the game. So I was going to school on the East Coast. I was a lieutenant in the Marine Corps in 1986, and I was going to school at Camp Lejeune down in North Carolina. And so on the weekends, I wouldn't have anything to do. So we'd get done on Friday. I'd drive to the airport and I'd catch a flight and fly up to, you know, hopefully the Red Sox were playing on the East Coast. And they were in September. And I'd watch them play. And so I saw Yankee Stadium for the first time. Interesting event, right? I saw somebody, they pulled a Yankee T-shirt. Or a Red Sox T-shirt off somebody in the upper deck and lit it on fire and launched it out of the upper deck. And I remember thinking, "Yeah, this is not normal, right?" And so, anyway, I was in Boston watching the Red Sox play, and if I recall right, they were playing the Yankees, and it was in the eighth or ninth inning of a game, and Dave Stapleton got sent in to play first base. And there's a ball hit to the either the third baseman or a shortstop, and on the play the ball sailed a little bit, and I want to say that Dave Stapleton stretched early, and then the ball sailed, and he either had to come off the base, right, or the ball got past him, you know. And so, and the Red Sox won the game, and we're riding home to his house later that night. And I said, you know, later that evening, cause it was a day game. And I said, when do you put, you know, Dave Stapleton in? And he said, why? Because of that play? And I said, yeah. He said, well, you know, that's just an experience as a first baseman. right? He said he's a middle infielder. You know, so I mean, and sometimes when you go to play first base, you're a little bit too anxious to stretch for pitches, for throws, and, you know, and a ball will sail on you, and you don't have the lateral movement anymore because you've already committed to doing your stretch. So he said, you know, it's pretty, you know, when you ask somebody to do that, there's a lot of nuances that go with first base. And he said, so, you know, he said, to answer your question, he said, you know, Billy Buck's a pretty good first baseman. And so he makes all the basic plays. And so if he's okay, I leave him out there. Now, if the game's out of hand one way or the other, I'll take him out and give him rest. Or if he comes to me and tells me that, you know, his ankles are giving him problems, I'll get him out of there too. He said, but if he's fine, I leave him in there. So there's much been made about that and about, you know, the fact that Bill Buckner was in there. And I think the bottom line on that decision, and my dad has said this, so this is nothing new, is if Bill Buckner didn't get to that ball, that was my dad's fault. Okay? But he got to the ball. He just missed it. Okay? So I think that to understand what happened that night, the only thing I could tell you is that that was the only conversation I had with my dad about why he changed first baseman. And so so he was comfortable with Billy Buck as long as he hadn't come to him and said, hey, my ankles are giving me problems, and, you know, if you can get me out of there early, you know, please. So that's, in my opinion, that's what happened that night. And I think if you read my dad's quotes throughout, you know, they asked him if you were leaving it, you left Bill Buckner in there for what sentimental reason? And my dad said, no, I didn't. So that's the only thing, you know, that I can add to that. And the last point that I would make, and again, I've seen this discussion go on since 1986, and I've known the truth since 1986. Okay. Now, I don't have any axe to grind against Roger Clemens. Other than, I think Roger Clemens knows, I know Roger Clemens knows the truth. And why this thing has been, and it continues, it was written in the Boston Globe the other day, you know, the controversial 1986 World Series when John McNamara removed Roger Clemens in the top of the eighth inning. So it continues, that fiction continues to be written. And I think it's important that if you're a baseball fan and you know anything about the Boston Red Sox, if you know anything about my dad, if you think that my dad pulled Roger Clemens out of that game in 1986, after the year that he had, after seven innings, when he'd struck out eight and walked two, when he'd only given up four hits, then you don't know my dad and you don't know much about baseball. Okay? And I will tell you this. The one thing I don't think my dad gets credit for was that Red Sox team, the bullpen, not so much. Right? Go look at the numbers. Go look at the number of names that went through that bullpen that year. And those guys were all, you know, I mean, they were all battlers and whatnot. But to me, I mean, look at that bullpen. You know, Schiraldi comes out of nowhere to be the closer. And I don't think my dad gets enough credit for that team getting there and him handling the pitching staff that got him there. So my only purpose in recording this and publishing this is that I think the truth is important. I think the truth is important. And I think if you know my dad and you know a little bit about baseball, you know, my dad would have bet on Roger Clemens any day of the week. Any day of the week and twice on Sunday. So upon my dad's death, I just wanted to add my voice saying that that night, him talking to his son, right, nobody else around, and talking about the events of that night, right, his starting pitcher told him to bring in Calvin Schiraldi. Okay, I got it. Now, as the years have gone by, all that has been, you know, much controversy surrounded that. And so I just want to tell everybody who's interested in that issue, right, what I know about it. And as I said before, my dad might have been a lot of things in life, but one thing he wasn't was a liar. And I'll tell you what, the guy on the other side of this issue, he's not in the Hall of Fame because he cheated. He was federally indicted for perjury. He was found not guilty. That doesn't mean innocent. That means they didn't prove the case. Okay? So I think you have two very different track records stacking up against each other. And again, I don't have anything against Roger Clemens. You know, he was one of the greatest pitchers of his day, and I think he made some serious mistakes. I think those character flaws, though, are embedded in this story. And I remember talking to Bill Fisher and saying, well, do you think he'll tell the truth? And he looked at me, he said, no. I said, are you going to say something? And he said, and Fish said, Mike, I'm not going to, I don't want to get between your dad and Roger in the middle of this. So that's what I know. And to all you Red Sox fans out there, my dad loved managing the Boston Red Sox. And he was heartbroken that they didn't win the World Series that year and end that curse in 1986. And I can remember myself, I was in Iraq in the city of Ramadi, where in 2004, when the Red Sox won their first world championship. And I was there with the assistant division commander was Joe Dunford, who would later go on to be the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff from Boston. Our division sergeant major, a guy named Wayne Bell from Boston. The guy who Joe Dunford replaced, John Kelly from Boston. So I was surrounded by them. And the aftermath of all of this had a huge impact on me relative to, I didn't watch baseball for years. And I don't mean like three or four. I mean, probably for about 10 or 11 years, I didn't watch baseball. And I remember being in Ramadi and on occasion, you know, you see clips of the ball games and things like that. And when the Red Sox won, I just remember thinking, this is what should have happened in 1986. And it was just sad. It was just sad watching, you know, what happened in Boston and thinking, you know, but for, you know, 50 different things that happened in game six and game seven, you know, the Red Sox win in 1986. And my father's career is incredibly different, right? Incredibly different. So anyway, that's what I know. I've known those things since 1986. And so I think it's important. And the reason, again, I did this is to tell the truth about what happened that night. The truth as I know it, the truth as I heard it from my father's mouth, when there wasn't a sports writer around, there wasn't a camera around, it was just he and I doing what I had done with him since I was a little kid. And that was talk baseball, talk the ball game, talk about the next night, and all of that. So, again, one of my dad's favorite singers is Frank Sinatra, so probably fitting to open and close with this. But as I said, my dad loved managing in Fenway Park, Love managing the Red Sox. And to conclude all this, I mean, if you spent time with him, he was a baseball guy. That's all he ever did. He never did anything outside the baseball field. He didn't consider himself anything other than a professional baseball guy. After he retired, I said, why don't you go get involved in college baseball? Vanderbilt's got a great program there. He goes, I don't do that. Those guys are college guys. I'm a professional baseball guy. And that's how he saw himself. And that's how he lived his life. Born in the Depression. Father passed away when he was 13. Self-made in everything he did. My dad was a baseball guy. And you could tell that if you spent time with him, because when you got ready to go to the stadium, his personality changed. And my dad was a very ordinary guy, the way he grew up. So everybody from the parking lot attendants to the security guys to the groundskeepers, those were his people. And I remember sitting in his office in Fenway. And, all of a sudden I hear this, like, knock on the door. And so there was a door that leads from the clubhouse to his office. There's also a door, a side door, that led to a walkway outside of the clubhouse. And so from that side door, I hear this, you know, knock on a door that sounded like, it was this weird knock. And he looks at me, he goes, shut that door, which was the door that led to the clubhouse. And I opened the door, and I closed the door to the clubhouse. And he stands up, and he opens the door to this passageway outside the clubhouse. And here's a bunch of guys from the ground crew standing there. He goes, come on in, boys. And so they pile into the manager's office in Fenway Park. And he looks at me and he says, Mike, I want you to meet some friends of mine. And he introduces me, you know, to the ground crew. And they come in and they start talking baseball. Johnny, right? And they're all Irish guys, right? Hey, boyo, how you doing? Right? Which is an Irish thing. And I'm sitting there, and I stand up, and I shake hands with all these guys, and they're like, Mike, you're the Marine. We've heard about you. You like Boston? I'm like, yeah, it's nice. And then they talk about John, and they're giving him their opinions. Hey, Stanley, don't bring him in anymore, blah, blah, blah. And they're bitching at him at, you know, hey, Gedman. You know, he can't. And so, I mean, and these were the guys that, you know, on my dad's team, obviously, and they had opinions about everybody. Bogs. Holy shit, Johnny. You know, so you sit there and you watch that. You know, the closer the games got, you know, his demeanor changed. And let me tell you what one part of that thing, and this is a part of the story, too, and that's the media. He did not suffer the media well, and that's a part of this story. Some of the people that have been principals in this story, right, my dad hated, and they hated him. And I would tell you this, it's colored their reporting. Because as I've said, I've known the truth about this since that night in 1986, and I've watched the stuff that's been written, and since that Saturday night, October 25th, in Shea Stadium, not a lot of it has been accurate. And so the media is a part of the story. And I think a lot of those guys have taken Roger Clemens' side in all this. And as I said, I think if you if you're a baseball fan and you're interested, I don't think you have to go too far to find where the truth is. I just don't. Why they continue, and I saw it even written in an article that Dan Shaughnessy wrote, that John McNamara removed Roger Clemens for pinch hitter in the top of the eighth inning. So that narrative continues to be out there, right? It continues to be out there, and I read it, and I just shake my head. Because since that October night in Shea Stadium, I've known the truth. And then in that article, you know, Roger Clemens is quoted again. And somehow or other, his words carry more weight than a guy who's never been accused of lying in his life. A guy whose forte was handling a pitching staff. And you're asked to believe that he took the greatest pitcher of his time, who was pitching for him, with the lightning bolt attached to his right shoulder, out of that game with a one-run lead just for a pinch hitter. If you believe that, I have some swampland in Iowa I want to sell you. So anyway, I think I've said enough. Again, my object here is not to trash anybody, but I used to go to the ballpark every day that I could with my dad. I got a chance to see my dad in a way that nobody else has never got to see my dad. My sisters couldn't go, right? Nobody else was around. And it was what I loved. I said earlier in this thing, I became a Marine officer because I knew how to manage a lineup card. I knew how to handle people. And as a leader in the Marine Corps, I saw that I could do the same things, right? Instead of pinch hitters and relief pitchers, we had weapon systems to apply to tactical situations against an enemy. And I knew how to do that. And the greatest thing that, you know, in my deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan, the one thing that always stood me in good stead was something that I learned from my dad. And that is how to keep your head in the game. That there was, that physical mistakes happen on a baseball field, but mental mistakes are unforgivable. It took no talent to hustle, took no talent to keep your head in the game. You just had to do it. And I will tell you this, that saved a lot of lives. In both Iraq and Afghanistan. And I learned that playing baseball. I learned it from him. So, with all of that said, thanks for listening. Have a great day. And to my father, rest in peace.